The Bizarre Cast contains adult themes and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Bizarre Cast, where we are cross-continental, cross-generational, and we cross all genres. And today, we are talking about True Detective. I am Richard Martin, and with me today, as always, my partner in crime, Robert Christopher.
And yes, I'm Robert Christopher, and he's Richard Martin. We're the double trouble. So hopefully you'll enjoy this podcast because we're feeling very refreshed and not suffering from any post-traumatic anything. We're in a good mood. We're going to have a good podcast. So go ahead. How are you, Rich? How are you doing today?
I'm absolutely fantastic. I'm feeling fresh as a daisy. I think after the last episode, we need to deep a little bit into something a little bit meatier. But I think I have a few stories since the last time I didn't get to cover because okay. I sort of dug right in. I was mentioning to you because we always seem to do a pre-podcast before we even record. So all the best stuff is missing as far as I'm concerned. So it's Mardi Gras season in Sydney right now. And it's I think it's the biggest Mardi Gras festival now. You might be able to tell me because I'm not really too sure.
No. I was going to ask you: is it the same concept of the throwing of the beads?
Well, down here, it's very much associated with LGBTQ plus. So it's all they throw like a month long festival. So our new housemates, they're from Northern Ireland, two guys, and one of our first bonding experiences. We went to a burlesque show. So, Robert, you've probably seen something like this, being from New York and all that. I'm not going to assume, but you can confirm for the audience whether or not you have.
I will confirm.
You can confirm. So, this guy.
Yeah, I have.
It's kind confirmed. Of a mix of like comedy and dancing, I suppose. And the host was like a 6'4" Samoan guy. He came out in like a dress, high heels, and a full beard. Absolutely hilarious dude. And then there was just various acts of like going on trapezes, doing rings, and wow, I was just like really blown away by it. It wasn't like overly sexual or anything. I wouldn't even say it was a burlesque show, but that's what they kind of purported themselves to be. Really good fun. And then last week they had the full Mardi Gras parade, which was the biggest in the world. And we had a great old time. I might post some pictures on Instagram for that. So, and I suppose in other news, a couple of weeks back, you would have heard about the Ketchup Fairy and a couple of shenanigans, but there has been Ketchup Fairy redemption in the midst.
Really? There's been redemption. I can't wait to hear this story. And don't assume that people have listened back. Tell the people, go back to episode, whatever it is, 57?
Yes.
I think. Yeah, whatever. Just go back and listen and you'll hear about the Ketchup Fairy. And now we're going to hear Ketchup Fairy 2, the electric
Ketchup Boogaloo. Fairy 2, Ketchup Harder. So this is, we have new housemates now. So what happened was, in the process of the last crowd moving out, they left behind all the condiments. They took all the condiments, but the only one they left behind was, drum roll please, the ketchup.
Oh, I don't have a drum roll. Hold on. No, I got the drum roll. This is going to be really bad, but I have my drumsticks ready. Wait. Nope, that sounds terrible. How about this?
Good enough. I'll take that from you. Yes.
Okay. I have real drum. I have drumsticks, but not a real drum. That's a can.
So they took all the condiments and left behind the one bottle of ketchup that was ours. So look, I got the ketchup back. All is well in the world. Karma and balance has been restored.
Oh, Rich, that story, let me tell you, I was at the edge of my seat.
I'm glad.
I was sweating. I was sweating with excitement.
As riveting a story as that was.
Mine is just as riveting or not riveting. Anyway, quickly, I will tell the story because I don't want to bore the audience with ketchup and condiments and housemates and burlesque and all this other stuff that seems, well, I don't want to knock burlesque because there's some people that are really trying to work it out there and make a living. Believe it or not, make a living with burlesque in this day and age. Usually, pigeons stop by my window and they say hello. No, they don't say hello, but not so strange for a pigeon to stop by my window. A couple days ago, I hear the sound, you know, because it's got the curtains in the way. I hear the feet on the air conditioner, and usually it's not that strange. I never look because it's you hear the little tap, 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 and then they fly off. They don't stay very long. Well, this time I looked, and it was an eagle or a hawk because it took off so fast I really couldn't tell, but it was a big bird. I've never been that close to a bird that big, and it was big. I wasn't slightly intimidated because he looked me right in the eye, and then he took off, but I wasn't sure if it was a hawk or an eagle because I was expecting a pigeon. I was like, you know, I usually just tap on the window, and they just go away. But yeah, I think an eagle, because believe it or not, on the news, they had found a hawk that was injured, and they thought it was injured from another hawk. So I don't know what it is with hawks around New York City all of a sudden. But yeah, it's a big bird. And I'm not talking Sesame Street either. I'm talking a big bird. It was kind of like, it was almost scary. Because I was expecting a little pigeon, but it was big. I couldn't believe how big it was. And I've never been, you know how they show these people like on the, and I've been to enough of the TV talk shows, but never where they had the animals, where they have like the, you know, they come out with the bird and, you know, and they have the big glove, you know, all the way up to their elbow. And, you know, you see the bird take off. I've never been that close to a bird. Sports games, yeah, but within context of the sports game, the Seahawks send off birds, the Falcons I've seen, but you're in a stadium. I've never been face-to-face, like 3 inches away from a bird that big before. So, yeah, that was my interesting story. It wasn't all that interesting, but, yeah, was expecting a pigeon and got a eagle or a hawk. Big, meaty.
So I suppose before we begin, there has been a few notable deaths since we last spoke, Rob, and people from industry close to your heart as well. Would you like to begin?
Yes, I would like to begin. I'll start with Keith Flint. He's from The Prodigy. If you remember the song Firestarter, he was I used to call him the Electronica Ozzy because of the black makeup under his eyes, just like Ozzy. He's very reminiscent of that look. He died at 49.
I do have a little story.
Oh.
I have a little Prodigy story. Okay, been to see Prodigy.
Wow.
Actually.
By yourself? Or is this one of these, you know, you went along with somebody else?
No, this is actually by myself a big festival.
Mm, good.
And I was on the front row as well. So I was just on the stage. And he was running around and he was kicking down lights and smashing the stage, and
yeah,
it just was brilliant because this was all part of the act, but in his wake there was a little roadie picking up all the bits and pieces and realigning them. It was quite funny.
Yeah,
he was a great showman.
He was, and he really had to put it, because that whole industrial music went south really fast. It was very popular and then went off the face of the earth. And then when he showed up at these festivals, he wasn't lazy. He knew he had to put on his working shoes. So yeah, his performances were very energetic because he had to win over the audience. It was a new generation, especially very recently before he passed away, that what you talked about, I saw a YouTube clip of a festival where it's, you know, kids were born, they weren't even born yet when he had a big hit on MTV. So he had to really win them over with his energy. And another person who passed away was the King Kong Bundy at age 61. No cause of death, but he was Hulk Hogan's opponent in WrestleMania 2, which was a big deal because it was held in three different spots. And I know that will make our friend Mr. Werewolf, who's in Siberia, he might have a tear right now. It might be a frozen tear because he's in Siberia. Because it's a yes, because there's a lot of them are they're just gone. It's like I forget. Somebody even said to me that if you go down the WrestleMania 1 lineup. It's like 80% of them, 80% of them have already passed on, but some have lived a long life. Some lived into their 70s. And
you would kind of say that that's quite an old age for wrestlers, though, wouldn't it?
Well, in the era of the 80s and the 90s, well, I would say the 90s, the late 80s into early 90s, yes, that was that generation had, you know, it went from, it used to be guys, you know, when there was territories, the guys would get a six pack of beer and drive to the next show. When it blew up and it became a big thing, guys were flying all over the place. They were doing pretty much wrestling sometimes 7 days a week. It would be Monday through Friday, twice on Saturday and twice on Sunday. And the drug use, the money went up. So that meant the drug use went up, pain pills, steroids, all of that other stuff. But no, he lived to 61, and I don't think he outlived a lot of guys that were muscle heads, juice heads, steroids, pain pills. If you go down the line, a lot of guys have died very, very young, 20s and 30s. So yeah, 61 is a fairly good number for wrestling. And then I will hand it over to you, Rich. We could discuss Luke Perry dying of a massive stroke at 52.
Yeah, this really did come out of nowhere. And I suppose this is where the generational gaps come in for us, because I knew Luke Perry from Riverdale, the new Archie comics sort of thing that's all over Netflix now as well. But you'd probably know him more so from Beverly Hills 90210. So he's had a kind of a resurgence lately for the new people on the block like myself. And he would have been a bit of a heartthrob. I think you were mentioning off air there that he was a bit of a James Dean kind of fellow. And yeah, it just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, if you search it now, one of the first things is, did a vegan diet kill Luke Perry? All this kind of crap. But strokes, they kind of come out of nowhere. They, you know, it can affect anyone at any time. It's the same like with aneurysms. Don't really know. So it is quite sad for his friends and family, because he was quite young. He's only, I think, was he 52. Barely 50 kind of thing? 52?
52.
Yeah, he's a really good actor. And I believe that you've actually met him once before.
Yes, he was very realistic in that, like I said, he was a James Dean of the 90s. This is pre-internet, pre-cell phone, pre-everything still. So, you know, if you're a heartthrob on TV, that's millions and millions of people, or girls, teens, whatever, heartthrob deal. Yeah. And he would do, he would show up at all of these malls when people still went to malls. And and we just briefly discussed it once. I didn't want to go really be I hate being a pain in the neck, because if you live in New York, you see all kinds of actors and famous people, and it's really, they don't want to talk to you. It's that kind of thing. They're busy. They got things to do. So I didn't really want to go into it. But for the few minutes that we discussed, it was he was super realistic, knowing that that wasn't going to last forever, that the screaming teenager thing, oh my God, you know, like the Justin Bieber, you know, that was going to come and go. And he was dead set on being and doing acting, you know, from what I gleaned from that conversation, pretty much in the middle of that mayhem of the Jane, you know, the young, good looking, cute, heartthrob. He already knew already that that wasn't going to last, and that he said, okay, you know, when this is over, I'm just going to take work, whatever work that comes my way, and I want to just act, and that's it. And that's pretty much what he did. When he could get in, he got in. I did not watch Riverdale, and there is going to be a 90210 reboot, so I don't know what the status of that is anymore, but those are the three notable deaths.
Yeah, I suppose. And I suppose with that, we will continue on with the show into more happy things. Well, I suppose today's topic isn't too happy, but we'll get on with the show.
So let's transition into the topic of the day, which is True Detective. I am dying, because we did not discuss this at all in private. So I'm dying to get your take, Rich, on this, since you finally watched
season three, finally, because I don't know for how long you were like, Richard, you got to watch True Detective. You got to watch True Detective. It was like, I just wake up in the morning. It wasn't even my alarm going off. It was just Robert being, True Detective, season three. You got to watch it so you can discuss it with me. And I was like, oh, God, turn off this video.
Yeah.
It was a really good show. I liked it a lot. I was compared to season one.
It was. I told you.
Go for it.
See?
Yeah, compared to season one.
No.
I'm not knocking it, but it seems to thread. You know, the show is True Detective, but it sort of had the same thread line of narrative. Something I do want to discuss later today. I know you have
No. Go ahead. I don't want to cut you off. I want you to give your theme of three. Don't go into the spiel yet.
So I thought Mahershala Ali as Wayne Hayes was absolutely phenomenal. I can see how I didn't see the Green Book, but I can see how he would have won an Oscar for his acting. I thought he was very, very good.
Yep. And the Oscars was on while the season finale of True Detective was on. And a lot of people watch a True Detective. And I bet you the executives at HBO were praying, please, please just mention it on the Oscars, you know, while these people are watching that this season finale was on. Yes, I watched it week to week. So I will have a different take because some of the stuff has faded. But give me, I want to hear your, in other words, I watched it week to week. Rich binged it. So it's a little bit more fresh in his mind. For me, it was a little bit more of a buildup, and then we'll discuss. But give me don't give me the makeup and everything. Just give me did you feel about this show?
Like, the story was quite intriguing, but I felt towards the middle, it sort of tripped up on itself and fell into easy tropes. Although the acting and all the cast and everyone, it was like phenomenally acted. Really good.
Yes. Scoot McNary. We got to give a shout out to Scoot. We got to give a shout out to Carmen. I don't know how to say her last name the proper way. A Jojo or a goat or Jogo. I don't. I just remember the wife. Oh, she was really well. Everybody was good. Stephen Dorff was good. And yeah, it was all well acted. But Rich, was it all for naught? Because.
I think it fell kind of flat in its face at the end, and it really did retread different seasons, I felt, anyway. I don't know how you felt. How did you feel?
No, I didn't. It didn't retread anything, Rich.
I'm entitled to my opinion. We were chatting.
I didn't hear you. Okay, you were tight. You are. That's true. But I got to hear your opinion when you're fading in and out.
So,
I cannot tell.
So for those who haven't watched it, I'd recommend you go back and watch it now before you continue listening to this, because we're going to go into full spoilers because there isn't any other way to discuss this.
And on top of it, there's really nothing to spoil. That is the humdinger of this whole season. In fact, you know what? I think it's just time to let me go, and then you'll just chime in. Guess what, people? You got yourself a Scooby-Doo mystery, an adult version of a Scooby-Doo mystery. You got all the symbolism. You got all the tone. You got the vibes. But it was, to say the least, shockingly unsatisfying, because it starts off with this pedophile ring thread, and which it picked up. Well, I'll give you the whole three seasons deal. The first season was a home run, but he got so much notes and got so much, not, I wouldn't say flack, but the director, Cory Fukunaga, who did it and did other movies. I don't know all the other movies he did. He got all the praise, and poor Nick Pizzolatto, I call him pizza for Pizzolatto. He got no praise. He got no acclaim. They thought it was all the direction. And I was like, no, it wasn't all the direction. It was the story. But, you know, we live in these weird times. And he got a whole bunch of notes saying, you got to have women. Why? I don't know why you have to have women characters. Why can't it just be it's a detective story. Why do you have to have this multicultural in it when it's not the story? But anyway, this is what he got back. Write more women, have a gay, have this, have more color, everything, all stuff that he didn't need. That's why the first season works, because you don't need representation for you to enjoy a show or to engage in the show or to have the same feelings. If you are a black person or any person, if you're purple, you're going to relate to adult men whether they're white or black or whatever color they are, being angry at someone who's hurting children. It's human. It's a human story. It's universal, yeah. So, but he got all of these notes from the studio saying, be more this, be more that. And that's why he made season two. It was linear. He got rid of the forwards and backwards and strings of time and all that other stuff. And people didn't like it as much, which I say bullshit. It's still a good season. In fact, I liked it a lot. He tried. He doesn't want to repeat himself. That's the whole point of an anthology series, is not to repeat yourself. So, but he did that. He took the notes, and guess what? It didn't work out. I know you didn't watch it, so I don't want to spoil it for you. It's much more action-y. It's not as deep with the dialogue and connected like the first season. But I just think sometimes, like any other movie, you could take Woody Harrelson and what's his name again? Yeah, Matthew McConaughey. You could put them in a movie together, and it could bomb. It just worked. It don't try to dissect why it worked. It worked. And so, but they added all of these notes, and he made the second season. And the second season, okay, when you compare it to the first season, now you go, okay, this is not as good. But I thought
I want to chime in here.
Good. I on its own merits. Okay, I let you on its own merits. The second season is good. I don't know why it has to connect to the first season, and that's what I liked about it, was it didn't do the same thing. Detective story at some time, and then with the benefit of going to the future and having hindsight, being able to go back, because guess what? In 1980, they didn't have the DNA and stuff that we have, the tools that we have today, so it makes for good television to be able to do that. But I'm glad he didn't do that again in the second season, because then it would be is that the paradigm people want? Is that the formula people want? A story from 1980 and a story from 1990, or what? I don't know what they want from that. But to me, the second season was pretty good because it was modern. He wasn't trying to repeat himself. You know, Rich, if you do a masterpiece painting and it's a masterpiece, it's sometimes hard to top the masterpiece.
I agree.
You don't know when your masterpiece is coming. Your masterpiece, you might paint six paintings, but your masterpiece might come at seven. For Nick, his masterpiece came at one. So it's the highest benchmark, watermark that he's never going to attain that again. Everything clicked, the timing, the times, everything clicked for that show to work. And it's hard to judge season one.
I felt season one, obviously, Matthew McConaughey was the much more serious of the two detectives, and Woody Harrelson, Rustin Marty.
Yeah,
of course. So he was McConaughey was deeper, like really into the case. Woody Harrelson was like the family man, the kind of more grounded person, actually someone who was more realistic. But then I felt in season three, I keep calling him Purple Wayne, as in Purple Rain, but it was actually Mahershala character. He was the McConaughey of that season, and his partner, West, he was the Woody Harrelson. So it really felt the same. They had the extra layer of them being an old man, and the extra layer that they had was that he was an older man getting interviewed for a documentary, but he had onset dementia. So he was trying to think back and piece the whole thing together.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't trying to piece it together. That's what you don't get. That was all. This whole season. Yes, I agree with all the thing. I was annoyed with the three timelines, which there was a fourth timeline, if you paid attention, when he went to visit her in the college. He had an apple, you know, an apple for the teacher. I bet you didn't even catch the apple. Did you catch the apple? He had an apple in his hand. Yeah, there was a time between 2015, somewhere I would guesstimate 2005, something like that.
Oh, sorry,
he
yes.
Visits no, her, no, she's no, reading a poem.
Had a little bit grayer hair, and he was dropping the daughter off. And then he went into the wife.
Yeah. No. Yeah, no, but this was a different time. It actually was four timelines, but it was just a blip to show you that they did drop the the case to save their marriage, and he had an apple, and he was the head of security, so it didn't matter that he was a that he lost his job. But now let's get down to the nitty gritty. This is set up for all kinds of conspiracies, okay? And I think it's a big fuck you to things like Serial and things like Pizzagate, where everybody wants the story to be juicy, but it's not a story. Like, that's why they brought up the Franklin scandal.
I'm going to have to agree and disagree on that, because I felt season one was leading to a pedophile ring conspiracy. And then season three was going down that exact same thread line, but then it turned out that, oh no, it was actually just one person had abducted the girl.
But wait. Let's break it down to the real nitty gritty of where it was leading. It was leading you into a good story. It was for six episodes. By the seventh episode, it kind of told you what happened, but you didn't know. You know, it didn't officially happen. It was like in your head, you knew that this happened, but it wasn't confirmed on the screen. It did go back to let me finish. It did go back to one, because when he did the second season and it got so much bad publicity, which it did not deserve.
Well, I have to ask you the question for season two. Was there a pedophile ring?
Yes.
In that, was it a pedophile story again?
No. It was a little bit of a pedophile thing. One of the characters was molested, the female character, and there was a sex ring theme to it. But that was the problem, that he was a little all over the place, but it was still very watchable. It was not like it was what people call it was horrendous. It was not like some bad episode of CSI or NCIS. It was not that at all. It just wasn't going to live up to that. It's like, I'll say any bad analogy you want. Like, listen, Beethoven, I'm sure he wrote some pieces that were stinkers, you know? It just didn't get played. It, in comparison to the first season, the second season.
Yeah, it's as you said, though, it's hard when there's a home run for your first season. Like, you can't follow up.
Right, that's what happened. Right, it's sort of like a hit record, and then you have this what they call the sophomore slump, which really wasn't a sophomore slump. It was a lot of notes. I'm sure he wanted to write it's like I say, how does he know what it's like to be any of these people? So how could he get deep into it? And getting that deep into this, with having to worry about, okay, do I squeeze in this kind of character just for the sake of squeezing it in? So anyway, like I said, he got flack, and then the reason why we got the third season is because they admonished him and he got scolded, and he said, okay, I'm going to come back with my tail between my legs and I'm going to do what they told me. And so that's why you got a little bit of the formulaic, which I was thought was kind of lazy.
Formulaic
because
story now
was,
or cookie cutter?
He had formula as in the true detective formula of 1980 storyline, 1990 storyline, 2015 storyline with a bit of something in between, and formulaic in the sense that he was conveniently had dementia. Well, let's go in order. It's set up where he's doing these interviews with a documentarian, which could be podcasters, Serial,
leaning
into
the modern day.
Look at it.
Like everyone obsessed with true crime. Like the appetite for true crime, as I said to you, I don't think I mentioned it on air. People are going to be going out committing crimes for new crimes for the true crime podcast, because I've heard every case under the sun now has got a podcast on it. And the scary thing is, people are making money.
Has it got
all
a podcast?
That is the thing. People are profiting from people's misery.
Yes, yes. Well, that's the funny part, was what I wanted to say to you is when he gets up from the chair and he tells her, well, you want this to be a conspiracy. Well, I don't want to be part. I want no part of that. That was him wink, wink at the audience saying, he was very cognizant of what's going on with Serial and all these podcasters and all these podcasts, not to knock the podcasters, but he was just giving you the, I know what's going on, you know, what's going on today is this massive, I still don't get why so massive. I can understand it's human nature.
Rubberneck.
It's always been human nature to, it's, you know, whether it's the car accident or if you want to go back to Roman times where they were just feeding people to lions. I mean, it's just, it's there. It's not a right or wrong thing. It's just that it's there. And so he's being cognizant of that. But as a story, it's a Scooby-Doo ending because it's literally building. I'm like, oh my God, this could be so many. It could go this way. It could go that way. I'm like, did he have dementia? And he doesn't remember. I'm like, I thought he was going to kill his wife. What was it that he was so mad about Roland?
That
what
whole
did he
thing,
forget
I thought
to do
that was
about
that they
Roland
had to kill
and
the security and
it was nothing.
Guy. So he's like, this fucked us up.
But he didn't have to. That's just what I'm saying. He didn't have to kill the security guy. When he was beating him up, I was like, why are you going to let him go? Just be, you know, I could. You, anybody that watches any kind of or reads any real crime fiction, which, sorry, Nick, you got to go back to the books. You're laying in all of these layers here, but you got to have a little common sense. The common sense of this was way too convenient because in the final episode, it's building. And it's also kind of telling you what's happening, you know, like, see, if you remember the sixth episode when the father finds the pink room and the James Harris, James Harris. The security for Hoyt, it almost like a horror movie. I was like creeped out. He's like a spooky zombie. He came up from behind them and I'm thinking, okay, great. You did build up. And this also is a thing that you don't know, Rich, is the fourth episode in every season is the big action sequence.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is the one where they had the claymore and the shootout. So, and they had there was a shootout in season two as well. So, okay. I was like, we got the build up. You got the false premise of the other Vietnam veteran guy. I forget his name.
The Native American dude in the buggy.
Sorry. Yeah, in the buggy. And the way he cradled the guns, you know, to make it seem like the girl was in the bag and it was really guns. It led you down a lot of paths, which true crime shows had you down a bunch of dead ends before leading you to the real answers. That's how it works. But this didn't lead you down dead ends. This led you down dead ends for six episodes. Then the seventh episode just kind of confirmed things that you already thought were going to happen. And then the eighth episode gave you a whole lot of nothing. And then within 5 minutes of exposition, which is the two old fucking detectives, which annoyed the shit out of me. 2 7-year-old guys, how did they have their badges? Yeah. You know, you got to give your badge in New York. You hand it in. So I was like, this is, all right, it's TV, all right, whatever. It's a show. I'll let it go. I don't know how they're still walking around. I don't know how he has dementia, but he's still walking around with a gun. And driving. And then he gives you the black guy, the other black guy with the missing eye or the cataract eye. Tells the story and then gives you the most pat ending, okay, of all time. It was a mistake. It was an accident. She pushed the boy. He hit his head and then they placed the body in a cave. Why? Why do you place the body in a cave? And the girl conveniently puts the hands in this, like the prayer symbol.
Actually, following on, so because you know when he meets the woman, is that actually her, or was he having another dementia moment? Why did the son keep the address? You know, there's so many. They left a few strings there.
Right. So there are I would say 90% of the dead ends are dead ends because from week to week. See, like if you would have known what happened. That it was an accident, there'd be no season.
This is what I wanted to say because you hit the nail on the head saying it was Scooby-Doo. And this is what I wanted to say to you yesterday, but we were keeping lids on it. So there was no way possible to get to the ending and the conclusion without the exposition. There was no thread. There was no way. Right. Absolutely nothing. Zero way.
It was all. It was.
Which was bullshit.
It was Bandersnatch. Right. Yeah. It was Bandersnatch. Right. For seven episodes. Or six episodes. Some people say by six. Because to me, I was hoping it would build. And then, okay, these two episodes are going to be the big explosive. This is going to turn. We're going to find out what happened. Who killed Dan O'Brien? Who? What happened to her? What did he? Was she really drugged? Was she overdosed? Yeah. The mother? Was it a fake suicide? Or was it a real suicide? Lucy, was it a real drug overdose? We're going to finally see. Yeah, Lucy, the mother. We're finally going to see Hoyt, which was... the guy from Walking Dead, which was a waste of his acting talent because it all was an accident, people. That's the ending he gave you within 5 minutes of exposition. 5 minutes of talking to a guy at a table. He explained the whole season of what happened. So everything that you thought could happen was probably better.
Must have been about 100 because he looked like he was in his 60s in the 80s. And they're talking to them as...
I know.
Men. I was like,
I know.
Come on,
I know. Same thing. Yes, I know. And same thing when they talk to the maid. She's like, I was there from 55 to 85. And I was like, wait a minute. So it's 2015. So how old were you?
Although they do say black on crack, though.
She seemed so young.
It could be quite old. Because have you ever seen How to Get Away with Murder?
Yeah, bro.
The woman.
Bro, she looked younger than the two guys that had the makeup on supposed to be 70. I'm just saying the timeline was just, you know what he did? He appeased HBO. I don't know if it's a contractual thing. See, there's a lot of things that happened here. There was the director getting the praise, which pissed him off because if I was the writer, if I was the one who wrote this whole thing and I don't get the credit, you're going to be angry. So he got miffed and pissed, or whatever you want to say. And then they were throwing barbs at each other, the director and the writer. And then he had a lot of direction, a lot of notes for season two. And then that didn't work well. And I know I'm repeating myself, but again, he had conflict with the direction, with the director. It's not the direction. It's a fucking story. It's the story. I don't care how deep. This is the Tony Soprano effect. Is deep, 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 deep. Okay, we know Tony Soprano didn't want to be Tony Soprano. I don't need eight episodes of him in a fucking coma to know that. One episode is enough. Same thing with this. I don't know why they needed the dementia aspect other than to put in what? To tell you what? It doesn't tell a story. He should just stick to linear storytelling.
This was my take on watching it straight through in about two days. Like really pushed hard to get this done. Because I wasn't watching it at normal speed because, as I said to you, there was so much atmospheric filler, just scenery shots and absolute bloat. So having watched it all together, there was no story. There was a few teasery little bits and it was interesting up to episode four, and then the last three episodes it just fell apart at the seams. It was just like biting into like a stale biscuit or something. It was just like, oh my god, what is going on?
No, there could have been a story. I would have loved to have this is what I had hoped because I already know. Once I started to see certain things that I said, oh, okay. And then you hear things about what's going on. And so you know that there's conflict with the director. You know he's got no more wiggle room to fuck around. So he's probably got to play it safe, get in all these characters. He probably needed a black lead too. He probably did.
No, not that the actor is terrible. The race bad. Stuff, which no, is good.
He's a great actor.
Like, they actually played it well, I thought.
Yeah, and I thought the casting was well. I thought his wife, that's what I was hoping. I was hoping she, who was a almost like the best detective of them all. I wish she stumbled across something, and then I don't know. You could have had a million scenarios. I thought maybe that Hoyt was going to kill his family because you don't get any definitive explanation on what happened to his wife. You just know she died, but how did she die? What is the conflict between him and his daughter? Why did his son keep the phone number? Why did he conveniently forget or did he not conveniently forget? Is it open-ended? I read that scene as like he gets all the way to the girl's house who was supposedly dead in 1980, then is alive in 1990, and that's why they're reinvestigating.
Well, that was the thing maybe I thought as well, because since he had the dementia, he was getting hallucinations of his wife and stuff. So it kind of felt maybe for his own solace in his own mind, he was probably making up and wrapping up the story himself at the end. Because for me watching, I was like, hang on now, you can't shove in 8 episodes of exposition and wrap up in the last 10 minutes.
Yes, you can, Rich, because that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did. And it was too convenient. Yeah, you're right. How did the Hoyt's daughter, let's explain to the audience, Hoyt's daughter
owned professional the big chicken success food farm.
Yeah, it basically it's like Tyson Chicken. It was like Tyson Chicken was. It was like they said, the maid said, they had a lot of business success, but family wise, the daughter's husband and daughter had died in a tragic accident. She herself went crazy, drove her car into a light pole, which made her a hermit. I don't know.
Yeah.
Housebound, a shut-in, whatever, however you want to describe it, which they should have just showed. This could have been, instead of a murder mystery, this could have been just a missing person story. And they didn't have to go through.
That pissed me off, because I wouldn't have minded if it went down the pedophile ring again, because they did have a nod to season one. It was like, these detectives from blah, 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 they were cracking a pedophile ring. And then they re-pulled the wool over your eyes. They did a double wool over your eyes. They did a triple wet blanket. It was actually nothing. It was just an accident, as you said. You can't do that. Yes. You can't do that for 8 episodes and it ended up being an accident, because it just throws away all the investigating, all the great acting, everything phenomenal. That looked gorgeous, acted gorgeous. The prosthetics on the old men, absolutely fantastic. But you know where it was let down? The story and basically the conclusion. I was like, Robert, why did you make why have you been pestering me?
Listen, bastard. We cannot do another comic book movie or show. Needed something that I thought was gonna be good. If I knew that, listen, this is what they did, okay? Just to show you, just to keep their cards so close to the vest and to fuck people even more, is they gave the first five episodes to to magazines and all the reviewers got 5 episodes. So it looks like it's going to be okay. The True Detectives is back on form. It's great.
And I would have said
it's good. It's action. Right. But it's all for naught in the end, because that 5 minutes kills the whole fucking thing. Where's the story? There is no story. The story was, oops, it was an accident. She wanted to have a daughter. And then I was like, then you start asking questions. Why does it have to be a pink room? Why does it have to be in this super locked in, like super max security, vault?
Scooby-Doo.
But then you ask questions. I mean, I was like so interested in who were these people under the white sheets? Like, who are these ghosts handing out these pedophile dolls? Oh, also, again, with the pedophile doll thing, not only did they put the kid in the cave, and not only did the girl cross his fingers like he was in prayer, but he just happened to drop a pedophile, one of those quote unquote wicker dolls, which I'm like, they have a whole bunch of toys.
Season one, like, really interesting. Interesting. And the spirals and the big pedophile conspiracy, because Matthew McConaughey was like, it's above our pay grade, and they just had to like be like, we're fucked, we can't do anything.
Not the case,
and this was just bullshit.
But that's what I'm saying. Why would Hoyt need to protect anybody?
Exactly.
Why would he could have just. Like, why were they so adamant to pin it on the...
They could have said, we were just playing in the forest and he hit his head and bring them back.
Exactly.
And so, did that woman decide to steal the daughter? Was she going to steal the son as well? If it wasn't an accident? So many questions.
Exactly. So many questions. Lots of questions. And it opens up some, like the Dan O'Brien, that was great. The cousin,
yeah,
again, wasted acting. I'm like, okay, you got this good, skeevy, dirty, you know, drug addict character who's like,
and he maybe was opening it up for conspiracy as well. He was like, I got people.
And also, yeah, right. Yeah, he was all, but not only that, I'm just saying that you got all of these good, dirty things where you can make it believable where this could happen. And then I still don't know why the, I don't know what you would call the not the governor, the guy that was leading the police, right away, nope, he's dead. We're going to have a conviction in absentia. We're going to pin it on this guy. That's it. We're going to set him up. Why? Why was he? Why did he have such a vested interest?
Well, like, I don't understand that. That's just like, look.
No, but to do it twice, again, yeah. did the father? And then they open up these things. Hey, listen, just because you're gay, that doesn't mean you can't have a baby. You still have the functionality of a penis that could go into a vagina, and you have semen. It can make babies. Okay. Well, they were, that, you see, you didn't watch that deep, bro. They were trying to make it
gay.
No, he was. Well, they intimated that he was gay to make you believe that maybe those weren't his kids. They wanted you to believe that. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
They right, but for Moot, there's no point to that because
also,
we never know.
Sorry, just on that topic, were they sort of declining that Roland West was gay as well?
Yes. Yes, that's what they were intimating. Very, like, hinty,
like
hinting at that.
Himself, helping out mom, the dad, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that's not the... But he had a wife, I mean, or a girlfriend for a while. Why did she leave? Doesn't it get explained? How did, and the documentarian character, why is she having a relationship or what do you call it, with the son? Why was she having sex with him? Why was she involved with him? Is there going to be another season where this gets resolved? Is this like Star Wars?
I did not pick that up, that they were in a relationship.
They were in a relationship, yeah. He told him. Remember when they were outside the house and they were talking?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you know, he goes, I can't see you in New York. How did she get all this information? Who was her investigator? How did she find the dead?
Why are you coming up on this out of all, well, I suppose she did say, "Oh, is this not linked to the big pedophile ring?" And it's like, nope.
Right? Yeah.
It's absolutely. Nope. Dead.
Right. That, but see that wasn't a storyline. That was a big fuck you to like I said to Serial to.
But you know what?
People,
that's a big fuck you to the audience because millions of people love it. So it's like, why are you giving the two fingers to your audience? I hate that.
I know. So do I. But you can't know that until the last episode because up until that point you had a show. And I'm thinking, okay, for me, my scenario was his wife wants to write this book and it's getting information and she stumbles across the no information that nobody's supposed to know, but she finds it. I don't know how you could go. I don't know why she even talked to that lady who was making all of those the wreaths and all of that stuff in that house, that creepy lady, the friend of Lucy, the mother.
That was another dead end of like, will you bring
a dead
back
end.
This photo?
Just dead ends.
It's like, yeah, I will. And then you see the photo in her book. I'm just like,
I was dying to find out like who's under that. Like, what is that going to turn out to be? And why did they have to be under a sheet? And who gets to play in with like, how could a black man? And I understand now because he's her caretaker, right? He's the daughter's caretaker.
Yeah.
Why do they got to play in the woods? Why not just pick them up and just take them?
How about in the estate, which is huge?
Yeah, exactly.
Play in the
garden.
And then why lock her up? Just have her on the estate. It's covered in gates and walls.
No. I mean, before they take them, why were they playing in the devil's den?
Oh,
why were they playing in the woods?
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I'm saying. That
just really like eerie for the sake of eerie, nearly.
Right. That's I guess just to make it convenient. Sorry, but and now listen, Rich, you've been a kid. Now let's say you've got a secret friend that's giving you candy and giving you toys, and you're not from an affluent family, and you're getting all of this stuff from now that we know an affluent family.
Yeah.
You telling me these two kids weren't going to say something that was going to throw the parents off? Because guess what? Did you see all the toys they had? I still don't know why they had to have these homemade wicker dolls. I don't know why he had to buy 10.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me why he had 10. When you see him, that's the only thing I did mention to you because I wanted you to watch is when Purple Haze does the Star Wars, he does the rouge with the lightsaber.
Yeah.
The kids had Mattel toys. They had
He-Man
toys of the time.
Yeah.
He-Man. No, but Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia.
Yeah.
And Mattel. And football game, all of these, they had all of these.
No, but that whole narrative, as you're saying, of if I had someone that was doing X, Y, and Z, so the dad, it was just implying that they weren't really attentive parents. Because he's like, I don't know, I never saw these toys. I certainly didn't buy them for them, but someone did.
Right.
So obviously,
someone did. Yeah.
The Hoyt family was giving
them. But they were taking those. Either they were taking those toys back. They weren't. Those kids weren't going home with it. But I'm just saying. For me, if I was getting all of this, not praise, what were they giving them? Attention. If I'm getting all this attention from these people and I'm playing in the woods with adults, which, again, I don't understand. But I understand from the psychological point of view of the character. But in the overall scheme, how you got there is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're telling me these kids aren't going to go home and by accident say, hey, you know, we were in the woods and we were playing with Mr. June. And then also this Christ-like passion for pain. Why do you got to get punished? Why does Roland have to go into the bar and get beat up?
So stupid. Yeah.
So I don't understand. And then he's leaving and he's like, punish me. Please punish me, Mr. June.
Yeah.
Junius.
Yeah.
I need to be punished. You got to punish. Why? Why do you got to be punished? Holy cow. Was this was all over the place. This was, should have been, I was like, totally on board. You got the cinema. You still got the good cinematography. You still got the good acting. They're going to win some sort of awards for the makeup.
Yeah, the best prosthetic I ever saw for old people.
But the people that said, oh, you know, it's not about this, you know, it's a, you know, it's about two guys that are really bonding. And I was like, listen, if you want a Lifetime movie about two cops that bond, go to Lifetime, to Wii, or go wherever you want to watch. This is called True Detective.
Yeah, because there wasn't really much detecting, to be honest with you, at the end. Like,
well, because he wanted to tell
it.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to tell a story of these guys getting fucked. Like, okay, upper management is telling you.
But that was season one as well. That was like, we're getting fucked by powerful politicians and pedophile rings that we can't talk about.
Not really, because as the first season ended, they said, we got ours. We didn't get them all, Russ says.
Yeah.
We didn't get them all, but then Marty says, we got ours. And then they show you the one guy that was doing it in that state, not the big pedophile ring.
My other commentary on the whole season, before we wrap up, is why do they get so obsessed on this one case? Because they said, like, oh, you've left hundreds of cases open, you've never finished, fuck all, to Wayne, Purple Wayne.
Yeah.
And
Purple Haze. It's a Jimi Hendrix song.
I know.
Not a Prince. Okay, I was going to say, you were mentioning Prince, but and the reason why I mentioned it to you, because you have been in Vietnam shooting a gun, so I thought maybe you could give some more veracity to this character who walked in the jungles of Vietnam. That was the thing, though.
I felt they played on a little bit. Well, no, because he was fairly put together. It was actually the Native American guy that was like typical, you know, PTSD veteran kind of thing. And
yeah, but back then they didn't really give, nobody gave a shit.
Well, at the very end, there was a 3-second clip of him in Vietnam walking into the
fire. Yeah.
So was that just him regressing to what he knew?
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, we didn't discuss this because there's much to unpack. Do you know for a while people were considering that this was an occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge type story, a Jacob's Ladder story where he's dead. He's dying in Vietnam, right? And everything that we saw was imagined.
Okay.
His dying man's thoughts, which I don't know how you, a dying man in 1975, let's say, is how he could dream about future technologies. So that got squashed, but people believed it for a week.
Yeah.
That's the point of what I try to tell you, how when I watch it week to week, because they're setting this up and you're going, oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You have a week, but I want to read this thing before you cut me off and then you wrap me up and then we never get anywhere because of all the stopping and starting. This comes straight from Casey Blaus or Blois. I forget. I don't know how to pronounce his name. From HBO. And this pertains to what the binge watching and the episode we did about burnout and stuff like that. He said, I believe the way that we do it is the best of both worlds for me and our creators. The thing that's nice about a weekly release is that you are in the cultural conversation for 8 to 10 weeks. You have an entire industry of people who write about and critique TV and enjoy doing it. You engage with your fans on a weekly basis. I don't think you get that benefit when you release all things at if you release things all at once. So that's straight from HBO, and I agree.
I would.
And we both agree.
Wholeheartedly agree with that because obviously Game of Thrones is coming out just next month now. And
yes,
everyone is going to be talking about it. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it as well. But
we will.
I'm not going to do a thing where you save it up and watch it all together because number one, you're going to have the whole thing spoiled because the whole world and their mother is going to be talking about it.
Yes.
And number two, that is a cultural phenomenon. Like people love talking about it because I used to work manager. This Game of Thrones season was just the best time of year ever because I come in the morning and I'd be like, oh, so Thomas, did you... Like, did you watch Game of Thrones last night? Knowing full well he did because he was obsessed. And I spend the first
for those day that don't wait, wait it. For those for Thomas, those that don't. Let me be the conversion for
the translator.
It's Game of Thrones. Yeah, let me be the translator. That's Game of Thrones for people that don't speak that don't understand the Irish accent. The Game of Thrones. He's not saying Thrones. He's saying Thrones. But let's stay on topic because I want to talk about this more. Now, when you watched it, tell me how you felt from episode 1 to 2. Go like briefly. Like, what did you think after 1? What did you think after 2? Like, where did you see it going? What did you want to happen? What did you hope would happen?
What I wanted to happen is what I sort of alluded to is I wanted to go down a deeper rabbit hole that there was going to be a deeper conspiracy and that they were just going to scratch the surface. Now, if you want to tell me that was very much season 1 all over again, I would have been okay with it because the acting was great. I liked what they were doing with, you know, the guy West with Hayes, you know, like
Roland
and Wayne being like black and white cops, obviously at a time, because they did allude like very briefly. It was like, you know, when Hayes was like to his future wife, he's like, oh, how are they treating you down here? And implied, like, as a black woman in this small town, like, how are you getting on kind of thing? And it was interesting, but they didn't really go down the racism too much because there was one scene after they beat your man up and he was like, you know what, you are Hayes, you're a... And then it's like,
No, they weren't beating anybody up. They killed Harris and they had to dig a grave. Real quick.
Yeah, real quick. But then, that you know, night, it didn't.
And then he says to, I'll tell you directly because I remember. He says, you uppity. And then he says, what, motherfucker? And then Roland says, I'm not going to say it. I just want you to know. And he rubs his finger across his forehead. And he says, I just want you to know that that's what I'm thinking. Because he was like, whatever he knows, it's over. Whatever he's is done, which means nothing because he knew nothing. It was all more of a like, hey, listen, this girl could have had a better life. We don't even know if the mother agreed or not. We don't even know if the father agreed. Maybe the kids would have had a better life. These things are not strange. People have done this. People give their kids away for adoption, thinking, I can't take care of this baby. Hopefully, they'll have a better life without me. So it's not a crazy, you know, wow, how could they think of this kind of story? It's not that obscene. Yeah. But the way they set it up was that this was going to be some, again, with the pedophile thing, which I don't know why he's so stuck on the pedophile thing. Either link them together and do it the right way. This whole, it's all about the conversations in the car. I could care less. I mean, I couldn't care less. That is you got to have both. You got to have story and you got to have character. If you're going to just tell me it's just the two guys bonding, it's a black guy, a white guy, are you going to tell me it's the Odd Couple? Yeah. Are you going to tell me that it's all of this stuff? Then go watch a Lifetime movie. I want to watch True Detective, where they detected. It's a detective story. When people say it's a trope, everything is a trope.
There's nothing new. But to go back to your question, like how I was going along from episode to episode.
Let me put it to you this way. Were you following the hoodwinked? Did you get hoodwinked from episode to episode? Like, did you fall for the red herring? Every red herring that he threw out there. No,
because you have to look at it. Or did you There's eight episodes. So episode one, the teenagers. It was not the teenagers. Right. It was never going to be the teenagers. Episode two.
Yeah, which was an allusion to the West Memphis Three, which is a story about three kids in the South that they blame these murders on these three little boys on them because they wore heavy, you know, Metallica shirts or whatever. They wore black, and that's why they got convicted.
Yeah, and anyway, then they had, episode two or three, where it was like, the Trash Man. It was like, look, there's still five episodes left. It's not the Trash Man. So it went along Scooby-Dooing, as we said, and just...
No. It wasn't Scooby-Dooing. It wasn't that bad Scooby-Dooing. You got to have a red herring, which everybody knew, watching it week to week, that it was not the garbage guy.
It's just what I said earlier. There was no way to ascertain whether it was, like, the black guy with the eye. Anything like that. And then we didn't even know about Hoyt then until maybe episode four or five that the mother used to work there.
No, you did know about Hoyt. You got to pay attention. His picture was on the wall. When they visit Harris in his office and he's like, "Why did I give up 15K in hemorrhoids?" Yeah. His picture was on the wall. So you got to pay attention to all these details.
Not that you see him. Again, I mean the actual company. You know, they were introduced quite late. And then that's what I hate the most about this stuff. It's like, it's these shows that make you feel like you're smart or whatever, but it's like, no, you're just introducing this information at the last minute to sort of tie it all together.
Exactly. Well, I call it, these people that have MFAs, Masters in Fine Arts, I will not use the derogatory term of what I call, of how I describe them, because they, and there's nothing wrong with this. It's like I always say that we do the vanilla and the chocolate analogy. If you give people vanilla, there's some people that say, "Hey, I like chocolate." If you give people chocolate, there's going to be some people that say, "Hey, I like vanilla." You know, come on. You're not going to it's the trying to please all the people all of the time that just ultimately fail. And with the people with masters in fine arts is they love the form where other people like to tell the story. Yeah. And I don't mind form, but just giving me form is boring. It's like let's take the most exciting people on the face in history. Let's take JFK and I don't know whoever you want to put them in a room and have them stare at a wall for eight episodes. It's not exciting. Yes, they were incredible people on this planet. It was John Lennon, let's say, and whatever. And who's modern? Give me a modern person that's amazing that maybe millennials think amazing. All right, The Rock. Let's put The Rock in there. Let's put those three guys in a room and have them stare at a wall for eight episodes.
Yeah.
It's boring.
It was style over substance in the end, I think.
I think, like I said, you got to take into effect. See, you're just watching the show on face value. There are deeper reasons why I think this is the way it is because he did season one. He did season two, like I said, and he got the notes and that he probably got tired of the flack and he gave in. He caved. He said, okay, I'm going to go back to what worked somewhat. I'm going to somewhat go back to what worked. So he had to go back to season one. They gave you that shot of Marty and Rust for no reason because it didn't lead to anything. Now, what I would like to see is do an offshoot and let me see this documentary character, I forget her name because
she had a name.
God, I just after a while, she had a name, but I forgot because I just started to block stuff out because I was like, okay, this is going to be meaningless. This is a red herring, except for the fact that how did she have all this information and why was and the other thing that I didn't like is if he's got dementia, can he have dementia either all the time or not convenient? It can't
there's
be
lucid
convenient.
Moments, but it was
like he gets all,
convenient for the yeah, show, the, I thought.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, it was just like conveniently he
It was convenient. He was lucid when he needs to be lucid, and he was dementia when he needed to be dementia. Where I was like, every once in a while, throw me a curveball. Like, have him be lucid.
I was kind of hoping with the documentary that he would have moments where he'd regress into dementia and he'd let things slip, and that he'd give information that he should have. That was an angle. Really missed the boat on the dementia, because the only thing they really did was when he drove down the road and he was in the pitch black at the old house, and then he didn't remember Roland being in his study. He was like, oh, hey, what are you doing here? And then straight away he was like, all right, back to business and drinking. That isn't how it works. It was
let's mention, I'm sorry to cut you off because we don't got time, but I want to mention the car outside the window, which for a while you thought was imaginary. You thought it was his dementia, but it turned out to be the black guy who didn't have the guts to come and knock on his door and tell him the information. For 20 years, he didn't have the guts. See, for me, I'm watching this and I'm going, okay, that car's outside. They go outside. Okay, it's his, because, and we got to explain, in the show, sometimes you see logical stuff and then it would go right into something like him seeing him, like when he, I'm going to say right now, when he sees the car, he hits the car with the bat, then he sees his 1990 self burning the clothes. See, to me, if you want to sum it up in one thing, it's trying to be smart, and I think he could have been smart if they. I think that he was just hampered by either handcuffed by certain things that the HBO wanted him to do, because after True Detective, they gave him a blank check. Yeah, do what you want, go ahead, go. And then when it wasn't a miracle, it's sort of like Michael Jackson's Thriller. What did he do to make it a huge success? He did nothing. He was lucky. It was the right time. It was the right place. But he couldn't replicate that. And so it's the same thing. You know, that was a grand slam the first season. Now he hits a home run, and in comparison, it looks like it's not so good, but it really is good. It's just not judged on its own accord. If you sold 30 million copies of an album and now you sell 15 million copies, they look at it as, oh, wow, that's it, 15. Sometimes you can't, there's only so much you can get out of that stone. You're squeezing the stone and there's nothing left. So that's what I think happened to this. I think, really cheating the audience. I think some people loved it. They loved the acting and they loved the bonding, and it's emotionally grounded and all of this other nonsense stuff that they sensible and more humanistic. But hey, listen, you know, I've met detectives and they come in all shapes, sizes, and this is fiction. I don't want it to be realistic. And I'll just tangent one second. Roger Ebert used to say this all the time about superheroes. And I'm like, no. Heroes are what you want to be human. Heroes save the day. Hero is a man that kicks in the door, saves the kid out of the burning building, right? I want my superheroes to be super. I don't want Superman to have prostate problems. I don't want Spider-Man to have, I don't know what happens when you get, I don't want Spider-Man to have arthritis. That's garbage. See, this is that garbage, canard, bogus theory people that want to throw this nonsense and say it's the acting, it's the bonding. That's great, but you got to give me a story that's called True Detective. Now, if you were going to call this buddy cop a love story, listen, they did care about each other. That was nice. It was good that he went a little more human, you know, with the characters. But I don't need an hour of him feeding his dogs.
Yeah, because I must say there was very subtle storytelling. I don't know, did you pick up on it? But in one of the,
I did.
But you know, he was like, "Oh, I have a clip-on tie because I'm afraid I'll get choked out by one." When he was first meeting the wife, and then very much later on in the season, they didn't even pass comment on it. But he was struggling tying a full tie, and the wife helped him. So it showed his progression as someone who is opening up a little bit more and becoming a little bit more human from Vietnam. But then I think,
okay, I totally get that he was he's closed off, and he was in a war, and you come back and you can't just flick a switch. I get all of that, but you're telling the story over so many decades that if that's what you're hanging your hat on, why am I watching? Because that's not what I signed up for. I signed up for True Detective, not true buddy cop bonding story. which is nice. It's nice in the mix. It's like a salad. You just don't want lettuce. You want tomatoes and olives like, and
over
whatever
so
else.
Many bloody decades, I was like, come on, just tell the story. I don't care.
Yeah. But- I just, but to me, I know you got to go. I know we got to wrap up. But to me, what, and I always see, this is why you got to watch Homeland. That's the one I got to get you to watch. Just the last couple seasons, if I can get you to watch the last couple of seasons, because the last season's coming up and I got to get you to watch that. But this is why it's so hard. And I'm yelling at you, HBO and Nick, come on, guys, you could do better. It's very hard to get people to watch this. I yelled at Rich for like, what is it now? Probably. 9 weeks? 9 weeks. And I had to beg my family to please watch this other than, because they watch other stuff. They watch regular stuff on television, not just reality stuff, not just the singing unicorn show and ridiculous nonsense. I mean, they watch guilty pleasure stuff too, but they would not watch this. I had to beg him to watch. I said, please watch this with me. I want to talk about it. Only for him to go at the end, thumbs down. He was like, why did I watch this? It was like a completely different show. You got 7 episodes and then you just threw what happened? And here's the thing is they had the time. He got so lambasted for the second season that they gave him extra time. Like, we're not going to rush him. We're going to let him tell the story. But then you come up with this. Why? It almost seems like a book report. It seems like, you know, when you're a kid, you got to write a book report and you got 2 paragraphs and you need that third paragraph and you got to wrap the whole thing up. That's what it seemed like to me.
Of course. And speaking of wrapping, Robert.
Let's wrap it up. Yes.
So everybody, I hope you enjoy this one. This has been Richard Martin and Robert Christopher. This is The Bizarre Cast. And you can follow us on all the socials at The Bizarre Cast and check the links in the show notes for Robert's music. And if you want to support with a virtual tip jar, there's a link in there too. So until next time, amigos, take it easy and don't be committing any crimes for your next podcast.
End of line.